The incredible powers of the mind. Jeffrey Mishlove with us. We'll be back with him and you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, how many of us have stared at an object wanting it to move and maybe it never did? Have you ever done that?
I have done that. I'm not particularly gifted in that form of psychokinesis at all. And I would say it's very rare to have what we call macro PK, macro psychokinesis, to be able to move a large object around with the mind is extremely rare.
Why can't we do it, though, at will?
It'd be a very different world if we could do it at will. And I think there's a lot of fear in the human psyche about it because, going back to the old science fiction film, Forbidden Planet, the Freudian notion that unconsciously in our mind we harbor sexual desires, we harbor anger, the desire to punish other people. And if we could express all of our subconscious wishes and make them manifest in the world directly, why, there would be monsters around. And the monsters would be us.
Let's go back to the phones.
If you got mad at somebody, you wouldn't want them to choke to death.
No, that's true. Shane is in Dale City, Virginia. Shane, thanks for calling. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, George? And it's Jeffrey, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I had a coworker recently recount an experience which sort of showed his intuitive side, if you will. And I don't want to put words in Jeffrey's mouth, but do we all have the ability to be intuitive and psychic?
I think we do, Jeffrey, don't you?
I think we do, but it's like any other talent. Some people will have more of it than others.
Did you ever read my aunt's book, Breakthrough to Creativity, by any chance?
Oh, yes, that was a wonderful book, and she had a big influence on me, Shafia Karagula. I invited her to speak at the University of California at Berkeley back in 1976. She did indeed.
Yeah, she was one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
She was my dad's cousin, and she loved this. She used to call me about what she was doing, and once she realized in the early days of my career that I was doing radio broadcasting, she thought, oh boy, here we go. And then she died.
Remarkable aspects of that book, which has stuck with me all of these years, is what she referred to as the dream school.
Yes.
Where people would discover themselves at night in their dreams in a classroom where they're being taught various psychic and mystical arts. And in one case, one of her psychiatric patients described these dreams and recognized another person who was in the dream school with her, managed to contact that person and learn that he was also having similar dreams.
In those days, she was a psychiatrist who switched her practice into covering the paranormal, the unusual. She was very fascinated with telepathy. And, you know, she did this at a time that nobody would do that. She, you know, risked her medical career to do this, but she loved it.
She was a real pioneer, and I feel fortunate that I had the privilege of meeting her.
That's cool. That's great. Let's go to Eddie in Round Rock, Texas, east of the Rockies. Eddie, go ahead.
Hey, George, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
And with Dr. Mishlove, I've been wanting to call with a certain opinion, just get your opinion. I think tonight would be suitable. Dealing with synchronicity and numbers, a lot of the time when I'm behind a car at a red light, I always notice that the license plate will have the number 66. And, I mean, together, 60 and 66. And I thought that was just kind of interesting that it's something that I've noticed a couple of years ago, and it happens, like, quite often. I was wondering if that's like means anything, 66, or just that kind of issue.
What does it mean anything to you?
No, I mean, it's never come up before. The only time I ever notice it is just seeing it behind any random car, and a lot of time it's just when I'm at a red light and I'm just looking around and I see right in front of me.
Here's my suggestion, Eddie. When you're 66, drive carefully. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. And again, this is just something that I've noticed in the past couple of years, and it's just, I don't know, it's like makes me think, I mean, I should like look into that and find out like what that means. Cause,
Jeffrey, could they be omens? Could they be, you know, things of the future? Like, I'm not kidding. I mean, maybe when he's 66, something's going to happen tragically in a car.
It might well be that, but on the other hand, there's a term called apophenia, which refers to the tendency of the human mind to project meaning into the world where there really is none. Sometimes these synchronistic events are like just leaves blowing in the wind in the autumn, where a little whirlwind will come up and the leaves will form a pattern, and you think, oh, okay, there's a dust devil or something of that sort, and then a moment later, it's gone.
Just like that. Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to get back to this military application where they're, you know, setting out $4 million for this. So they're going to go ahead with this then.
Oh, yes. This project has been funded.
And again, what do they want to do with the troops?
Well, the idea is, what they call it, is implicit learning. And there's now quite a large body of scientific research on the subject.
They don't want to use the word psychic at all, do they?
That's the idea, yeah. They want to avoid that term. But I know that there are people in the military, in the Office of Naval Research, who funded the project are familiar with the research in parapsychology, but they're smart enough to know that it's just politically unwise to use that language.
Right. Are they laughing about this, or are they pretty darn serious?
They're very serious. And of course, it's not just parapsychology. Parapsychology may be involved, but the idea is to combine it with state-of-the-art research on how the brain works.
What do you think was the catalyst to get them to do this?
Well, we've got a lot of soldiers who come back from the war, and many of them report extraordinary experiences. I've interviewed many soldiers myself who would say, you know, I suddenly knew I had to turn around just in time to see an enemy, and I was able to kill them before they killed me. So there's a lore within the military about these abilities, and it's researchers are now doing everything they can to save human lives. You know, when American soldiers go off to war now, we don't experience the kind of casualties that we did in Vietnam.
No, not at all. Let's go to Wanda, Jersey City, New Jersey. Hey, Wanda, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, George. I was wondering if this psychokinesis, how I could find out if this kind of mind control things can help me with my terrible claustrophobia, because I've heard you talk about that and that you have.
How
that
could help you with your claustrophobia? I think what could help you with your claustrophobia, honestly, would be getting some hypnotherapy, some regression, and you know, maybe in a past life. Something happened. Maybe you died in a closet or something like that. Who knows? Jeffrey, do you have any experience
there? I think you're pointing in the right direction, George. Definitely, if you have claustrophobia, there are various therapeutic processes that could be of help that are completely unrelated to psychokinesis.
That's right. No, something happened to her in a past life.
Maybe early in her own childhood.
Or early in her childhood. That's mm-hmm. right. You can't. Yeah. You cannot rule that out at
Usually, phobias are very amenable to desensitization in psychotherapy, where you gradually expose yourself to the source of the trauma.
Are there any great scientific studies that are being worked on in this arena?
In the arena of
parapsychology.
Yes, there's some very exciting research that has been published in the last couple of years, work done by Daryl Bem at Cornell University, in which he conducted a whole series of studies involving very conventional psychological experiments, but he added a paranormal twist. For example, you've heard of the stimulus response experiments in psychology. where the stimulus precedes the response. But what if you get a response and then the stimulus doesn't occur until later, as if it had an effect going backwards in time? Daryl Bem published a whole series of these studies with extraordinarily strong statistical results, and the scientific community is really buzzing about it at this point in time.
Ryan in Vancouver, Washington, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yes, hi. I'll just keep this brief. I'm taking hands throughout the year. I tuned in earlier when Jeffrey spoke of Dr. Jalen Hynek, and that's what got my thing going, because I had a family member who met him in the mid-70s, and he was part of, you know, Blue Book. But I was just wondering if he could explain what he was talking about earlier about Dr. Jalen Hynek earlier, and I'll just take the answer up here, and you guys have a good morning, okay?
Okay, you too. You want to talk about that a little bit again?
Sure. J. Allen Hynek did run a project called Project Blue Book. Well, he was involved in it. It was an Air Force-funded study. He looked at UFOs.
He was a consultant, I think, at the time,
yeah,
right?
I think that's probably true. He set up, he was at Northwestern University, and he was a pioneer UFO researcher. He coined the term close encounters of the third kind.
And swamp gas.
And yeah.
That haunted him.
That's true. He was a skeptic initially, dismissing these, but he finally concluded you could not dismiss everything, and he set up his own institute at Northwestern University to explore these phenomena. It was a great pioneer researcher. He made a cameo appearance in the movie.
He did. Encounters. Holding his pipe.
Yeah.
Remember, that was a great scene.
Yeah.
He's missed. This community, the UFO community, truly misses the guy.
Well, and the whole UFO community has sort of dissolved into...
It's segmented.
Yeah, many different segments. Don't really see a lot of serious scientific research going on anymore of the sort that Hynek attempted to establish.
No, you've got some great researchers like Richard Dolan, they're out there, Kevin Randall, people like that. But you don't have, you know, now that John Mack is dead, for example, Jeffrey, you don't have that kind of serious scientific approach anymore. That's disappointing.
It is disappointing, but I suppose part of the problem is that the phenomenon are so elusive and so interrelated with the phenomenon of the mind itself, and we have yet to really get a handle on that. You know, Carl Jung, the great Swiss psychiatrist to whom I've referred several times, wrote a book about UFOs. It was titled Flying Saucers. And he described them as archetypal forces within the psyche of humanity. And he noted that these same forces were responsible for the creation of all the world's religions.
Well, some believe that they're demonic as well. What do you think of that?
People often, when they talk about the demonic, are, in my mind, projecting their own inner fear out into the world around them. It's definitely not a scientific term. And my concern, frankly, if you look at human history, is that some of the most evil actions in human history were created by people who felt that they were combating the demonic.
Okay, we go now to Lexington in South Carolina. Peter's with us. Hey, Peter, go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good to have you with us, Pete. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have PK abilities, and it's kind of strange hearing this about, was your name Ted Owens?
Ted Owens, yeah.
Yeah, because it's very similar. I kind of communicate with these, I know this sounds crazy, but I communicate with these beings, you know, these spaces.
How long has that been going on there, Peter?
Since I was a child.
Ah, okay.
In fact, my sister and I may be even the inspiration for, like, Escape from Witch Mountain. One of my parents knew that author or whatever. It's very, very strange, but it took me later in life to really kind of put it all together. But what I wanted to say to, is it...
Jeffrey.
Dr. Mishlove or Jeffrey?
Mm-hmm.
I used to watch your show, by the way. Was it Thinking Aloud on PBS?
That's it.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's anyway. What I wanted to know, you spoke of Ted Owens having this sort of volatile personality, and something I've noticed about my own abilities is that in order to manifest things in the material world, you have to have emotional content behind it, and so you have to be someone with very, very strong emotions, in a sense, and if you can channel that, like say if somebody wants to will something, like, you know, make an object move or something, you can't do it just by making a decision rationally or something. You have to tap into some really deep emotions. You have to really need or want something to happen.
Like anger?
In some ways, well, it can be a lot of things. Love, and what it seems to be that I've noticed is going on is that you're creating some sort of sympathetic vibration, you know, so in the universe, in a sense, and if you really need something or want it, there's a genuine emotion behind it. I mean, and that genuine emotion could be something like, you know, being vindictive or something, if it's really justified. Let's say someone's really wronged you or something like that, or you feel genuinely wrong. It's like the universe itself, almost like a gravitational force, is attracted to that genuine emotion. Like, you can't fake it. It has to be genuine. And then it's like it's like you're marshaling other forces. So you're not actually doing it yourself, in a sense. You're sort of, asking these forces to sort of come to your aid. So it shows the kind of interconnection of all things. Let me give you one quick example of what I mean. This is kind of a bad example. I wish I had some better examples. But one time I was working at this factory, and I had this boss of mine. He was this ex-Marine, and he just was always on my case. I mean, just, you know, he drove me crazy. I just wanted to do my job and left alone. But he kept, you know, coming in, and we had these really dangerous machines that we worked around. And he was showing me something, and I said, look, we're not supposed to do that. That's a safety violation or whatever. And he said, it's a safety violation. Look, you just do it like this. And I the guy had just driven me crazy for so many months that I kind of invoked my power, and it's like, it's really weird when it happens. It's like you're shifting time and space or something. I'm even amazed when I do it myself.
Well, did you wish him to get hurt, or what happened?
Exactly. And so all of a sudden, like, his hand, like, went down and got stuck in this machine. He got, you know, he got really, really hurt. I mean, he had the bandage.
Oh.
And, you know, I didn't mean to do it. Like I said, you're not intending it. It's a genuine subconscious feeling. I wish this guy would get off my back, and suddenly, it's like these forces make it happen, you know, then later you regret it.
Well, they take over. We're hitting the break right now. It's a little like Anthony in that Twilight Zone movie, Billy Mumy, our buddy, where you wish somebody into the cornfield and you do it. I want to get your reaction to this, Jeffrey, when we come right back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, so the previous caller kind of in an unwilling way, wished that the person's hand would get mangled in a machine. He didn't try to do it consciously, but maybe subconsciously. Doesn't that bite you? Doesn't it come back and get you?
Well, it's quite a story. And, of course, it's consistent with things that I have studied in my research with Ted Owens. And it's one of the reasons why I don't encourage people to try and cultivate psychokinetic abilities. And it's also a reason why I do encourage people to treat everybody you know with respect. If that factory supervisor hadn't been treating him in an arrogant and reckless manner, it wouldn't have occurred. And the truth is, although psychokinesis of this sort is a very rare ability, so rare that many people don't think it exists at all, you never know when you're going to encounter somebody who has that skill, and why take a risk by going around and treating people with a kind of reckless abandon and basically meanness?
Okay, back to the final calls we go. Jamie in Coronado, California. Hey, Jamie, go ahead.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. My name is Jamie, and I'm a first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
And what a pleasure to have this opportunity. Dr. Mishlove, in the early 80s, I was given your book, The Roots of Consciousness, while going through chemotherapy. and I ate it up. I read it from cover to cover. I couldn't stop talking about it. Well, one thing led to another, and I was invited as a guest to attend a channeling session for JPL, a Jet Propulsion Laboratory scientist. And the channeler, and I wish I remembered his name, the channeler was talking to an entity from outside our galaxy and answering highly technical questions being posed by the scientists. And I'm wondering if Dr. Mishlove had any contact with this or other channelers back in the early 80s.
Okay, that's a great question. Jeffrey, have you?
Yes, I've worked very closely with Kevin Ryerson, who is a trance channel, going back to the 1980s. He's a colleague and a dear friend and a person who has channeled many entities and who has also worked closely with scientists at the Stanford Research Institute. I have to say that the phenomenon amazes me and puzzles me, and I have no question whatsoever regarding the sincerity and integrity of Kevin himself.
These entities from afar, if they're indeed communicating with the people like the late Ted Owens, what do they want? Why are they doing this?
Well, in some sense, it's a mystery. In another sense, you might say it's part of the evolutionary process. Ted Owens described it himself that way at one time. He said, look at life on this planet. In spite of every sort of adverse condition, life has managed to survive. And if you live where I do, out in the desert, and go into the mountains, you'll find on every mountain crag there are trees growing. They've found a way to survive in the most difficult of conditions. And the life force includes consciousness, and it includes the forces within consciousness. And although sometimes they may seem to be adverse to us, ultimately it seems that evolution itself depends upon adverse conditions. That's how evolutionary breakthroughs occur.
Okay, we go to Travis now, truck driving in South Dakota. Hey, Travis, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. First off, I wanted to thank you guys. I'm a first-time caller.
You are
actually
welcome.
Another truck driver about a month ago told me about your guys' show, and
super.
I usually drive at night, and now I almost never miss it. I'm looking for some closure on an issue I had when I was a kid. When I was a little kid, I couldn't stand loud noises, banging, anything. I was deathly afraid of it. I wouldn't go in the shop when my dad was hammering on something. I couldn't do it. I couldn't go anywhere near it. And I know when I got older, my mom used to joke around with me that I used to tell her when I was a little bitty kid that I had been shot, and she'd ask me where, and I'd point to my birthmark on my side. And I guess, you know, I didn't think about it for a lot of years. I mean, I couldn't be around guns, nothing. But as I got older, I find myself wondering if the two might be related.
It's a classic example of exactly some of the very best evidence that we have for reincarnation. Dr. Ian Stevenson, now deceased, but formerly at the University of Virginia, he was the chairman of the psychiatry department, and he worked extensively with people like yourself who had memories related to past lifetimes, and he often found cases in which the past life memory was accompanied by birthmarks of this sort, and the birthmarks were typically related to death wounds.
Yeah, that fascinates.
Previous lifetime, he published a book called Biological Evidence of Reincarnation, in which he explores exactly this phenomenon, these birthmarks. And I have to say, it's some of the strongest evidence that we have in favor of a conventional reincarnation hypothesis.
If somebody got shot to death in the head, they may come back with a birthmark on the forehead.
Yeah. Yep. And there are numerous examples of this that have been documented. So I would say that your intuition about your own birthmark and the fear that you had of loud noises seems to be definitely along the right track and probably worth exploring further if that's something you care to do.
Jeffrey, the belief in the paranormal, does it also mean that you have to believe in life after death and also perhaps a divine creator? Is it all one and the same?
Yeah. You know, people tend to do that, but it's not necessary. I happen to have friends who are parapsychological researchers who are basically atheist materialists. It's and they feel that whatever it is, if it's a natural phenomenon, it ought to be understandable in terms of materialistic science. So you're not compelled to have that belief in the divine. But I would say most people, as they encounter a paranormal phenomenon, they feel that it does open themselves up to an appreciation of spiritual realities.
Let's go to Amanda now in Ontario, Canada. She's been holding a long time. Hello, Amanda. Go ahead.
Hi.
Howdy.
You know, I'm such a big fan, and Dr. Mishlov, oh, wow. It's an honor for you. Okay, I just wanted to share something about numbers. I see patterns as well.
Sounds like you just got electrocuted.
Okay. Someone just texted me.
That's a horse. That's a horrible text sound. That's all right.
It's pretty loud. Okay, I just
It was. Anyways, go ahead. We're almost out of time.
As far as numbers, I see patterns too, and I know what the numbers mean, and it's kind of like my psychic dashboard, and it's never wrong. It's actually never wrong, and so I don't know what the actual thing coming up is, but I know the type of thing. It's kind of like I know the object on the horizon, but I don't know what it, the type of object, but I don't know what it is. So I know when there's going to be deception, and I've experienced that with someone in particular recently, and it's never wrong. I know when there's money coming, and that there are certain numbers, and these numbers mean something to me. I know when there's when I'm on the right track, and I know when I'm not connected, when things are just random.
Well, it sounds like a great way for you to set your own guidelines in your own life. How many people should have this ability, Jeffrey, and they just don't?
Well, I would say that people such as Amanda, our caller, maybe represents 1 or 2% of the population, highly gifted, intuitive.
That's people. Pretty low, really, that yeah. low, huh?
I think so. Maybe when she says it's never wrong, she can rely on it all the time. That's a wonderful gift.
Going to Milwaukee, Wisconsin now. Cece's with us, first time caller. Cece, go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Yeah. Online also had that money thing happen to me. Numbers where I would just actually win money, but I had something happen on last year in the month. You had a the lady on that comes on every Thursday at the end of the last Thursday.
Yeah, that's Linda Moultonhouse.
Yeah, so last June on the 30th, she had a program, and it was dealing with something in regards to an instrument called a probe. She was given an analogy. But anyways, about a month ago after that program, there was a lot of things happening at that time and still are in the phenomena area of my life. So I'm trying to talk real fast so I can get it out. But anyways, I was laying on my bed trying to take a nap one afternoon, and there was a sun ray that was coming, I thought, into my bedroom. And I got up. It was too hot. It was overheated. It was past the sun. So I got up, and I sat on the edge of the bed. I had a friend to witness this. He came in the room and just sat there with me. So all of a sudden, this ray was just penetrating, just so fiercely. As I sat there, this being appeared in my room, I'm sitting up on the side of the bed with this guy, and all of a sudden, I saw this, like, 4 foot, it was about the same size as my head, his head might have been a little bit taller than mine, it was about four and a half, feet high. And so anyways, all of a sudden he had it was this kind of a pale orange looking creature. And he just took this taser. And I said, this is where America must have got tasers from. And he just tased me. And so my friend was like, oh, because I had on like just my bra, a sports bra and underwear. And my friend was like, oh, there's some marks on your chest. Two little strips, like. And he said, I said, well, give me that alcohol on the dresser there. So I got the alcohol and I rubbed in that area. He said, but they have some kind of writing on it. And so it just dissolved. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm just listening.
And so anyways, I've had a lot of experience with the supernatural and all the...
What was the writing, though? You know,
it was another language. I don't know what it was. He just told me.
Too bad you couldn't have taken a picture of that. Do they ever communicate that way, Jeffrey? Writings like that?
That's quite an extraordinary experience. I've never heard of one precisely like it. Although in the history of the modern religious organization called Theosophy, it said that spiritual masters from another dimension actually wrote letters, and the letters materialized and fell down through the ceiling, and those letters have been preserved and exist today in the collection of the British Museum.
We've got the Skype caller, Anthony, in Alaska. Go ahead, Anthony.
Hi, George. Hi, Tom, and hi to your wonderful guest.
The wonderful guest is listening. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. Listen, I want about the telekinesis. It can really have some adverse conditions here. Years ago, when I was a young man, just after I got out of the Navy, I was practicing some telekinesis with a bottle of model paint on the table. My now ex-wife was sitting there, and I was going to wonder if I could move that. And I sat there for 2 hours, and the thing moved about a quarter of an inch. It startled my ex-wife so bad that when I woke up the next morning, she had already packed and left. I had never seen her since.
It probably slipped from the sweat after 2 hours.
I tell you, probably. But anyway, you got to be careful who and how it's going to affect around you, you know?
Well, that's true. And also, remember that saying, Jeffrey, be careful what you wish for?
Exactly.
What does that really mean, anyway?
Well, I think when people begin experimenting with psychokinesis, it may seem like a game, but in your case, it broke up your marriage. These are not trivial abilities. They're very profound in many, many different ways. And there was a researcher, Dr. William Wolkowski, at the Henri Poincaré Institute in Paris, who was working with psychokinesis, and he had a research subject there, Jean-Paul Girard, who was able to, in experiments that he did, actually modify the genetic makeup of fruit flies. And when Wolkowski realized what he was actually doing, messing around with biological genes, he shut the research program down completely. And frankly, I have to say that was a wise thing to do.
Sure was. Let's go to Joan.
I'm not sure that humanity is ready for this yet.
Joan in St. Louis. Hey, Joan, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
This is your MSG lady, but I'll have to talk to you about that some other time. I have something I want to ask Jeffrey about. Every time I look at the clock, digital clocks, which I hate, I see the number 13. I go to the store, I'll get back so many $13 and something, or I'll get back 13 cents, or either the bill is 13 cents, and it's really bugging me. And I come to the conclusion that it's warning me that something's going to happen, and 9 times out of 10, something does.
Well, that does happen. You know, the numbers lady, Joan, you've got to definitely get up to Glynis McCants' website, numberslady.com. Jeffrey, we only have about a minute or so left. Overall, with all this, where does it take us? What's going to happen? Where's the future for this?
Well, ultimately, I suppose it has to do with humanity itself awakening to a larger reality. And it may seem to you that the number 13 is frightening and that you're going to be encountering various horrific things, but it may be that even though things do get frightening, you're going to learn some wonderful lessons along the way. And I think if we could do this interview 100 years from now, George, and look back and see what humans have had to deal with during that period, we might say, gosh, it was awful, but wasn't it also great? Look at the good things that came out of it.
All right, good point. Jeffrey, thanks again. Great interview, and it's been a long time, my friend.
It has been.
All right, you take care of yourself. Jeffrey Mishlove, his websites, of course, all linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and also one of his great books, The PK Man. That's exciting. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.